This is Dubai Friday, a weekly challenge podcast with Alex Cox and Merlin Mann. This week's challenge, watch Friday Night Baseball.
Is that what we're doing? We're listening to audio when we record? Is that it? Should I cue something up?
I was listening to a Pokemon Go podcast, as is tradition. Welcome to Dubai Friday. Good after morning, Merlin Mann. How are you?
Hello, Alex.
Hello.
I was just about to text you to say that's a good distinction.
Oh.
Distinction between work and business. That's good.
Yes.
It's like, it reminds me a little bit of one that I like that I certainly didn't invent is the difference between... you could say between management and leadership, but I like putting that as the difference between a leader, a boss, and a manager.
Oh, that's good.
I think the Venn diagram for that, it can be really interesting.
It's.
Did you want to get back to your show? Did you want to get back to your Pokies Men? Pokies Day?
No.
I've
become obsessed with what John Darnielle said.
You have become obsessed with something?
Me? I'm fixating on something?
All you listen to is the Mountain Goats interviews.
I didn't listen. It was a New Yorker feature. But the idea of like, it's not unhealthy to love work. It's unhealthy how we have framed work and the C word.
It's all about the frame. Another good. That's two good distinctions for you.
Yeah, I just feel a little bit lost. I've always been described as a self-starter. I don't think that's true, because it's just that I see something that needs to be started, and I guess that is the definition of a self-starter. Never mind. Okay.
You've been other described. You've been told, Alex has been told, that they are a self-starter.
I'm a self-starter. That's a positive trait, apparently.
So I've been told that I don't live up to my potential, which is true.
Oh, well, it's good to know our limits.
Show me anyone who actually lived up to their potential. Show me. Jesus Christ.
Wait. Oh, no. If that were true.
If there's anybody who was in touch with God and could have gotten out of it, you know, I think, Job is up there too, I guess. If we're just restricting it to the Bible, you know, Paul started out before the scales fell from his eyes on the road to Damascus and he discovered his calling. Wasn't he like a rich guy? I feel like I want to say, wasn't Paul like a merchant or something? What was Paul's occupation?
I'm not sure, but everybody
good
in
writer.
The Bible
love,
is
love,
either
love letters.
Mm-hmm. Yes, they're either rich, a temple leader, poor, or a slut, because those are like the main occupations. Wasn't Noah rich too?
He might have been like a Sadducee or a Pharisee?
That's what it's, yep. God, the further away I mm-hmm. get from Catholic school, someday the more I
will become
healed.
The first pope. I will wear the first pointy hat. Do you like Jesus Christ Superstar?
It's fine.
Bonk, 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 donk, bonk, donk, bonk, 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 donk, donk. My mind is clearer now. You want to hear the whole thing? I'll do the whole thing for you.
Oh, the whole Jesus Christ Superstar?
Are the Christ. You're the great Jesus Christ. You want to hear the whole thing? I'll do it for you.
No.
I don't know how to love him.
Normally, I'm happy to go in with the bits. This is still... abort. That's apparently one thing Jesus didn't like.
I love what you said, because I was thinking, and I'm interrupting you to say that you said what I was thinking, because that's what I do, is that it's the frame that's the problem. If you, okay, listen. I idiotically, like I do once a week, I looked at my local fish wrapper. I was at sfgate.com and I saw I hate when people say this about me, either as a verb or as a noun, but a bit of a rant about Malcolm Gladwell.
Mm-hmm.
And what I said to you, what I says to Alex, I says, what did I say?
I dislike, this is how I read Merlin Mann tweets. While I dislike the mean/breezy tone of this, I agree with a lot of the basics. That's you. That's what you sound
that's
like.
That's a tweet. That's what I sound like when I tweet to you in iMessages.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. Okay. Yes. Yep.
Tweet, tweet.
I was moving on. I was moving on. Okay. What does this
And, you know, I don't want to get in a whole, like, thing about this with people, but, you know, and we've talked some about turns out culture here. I mean, I think as recently as last week, but we haven't done a deep dive on exactly what that is. I think there might be an episode of Rectives where we exactly talked about this. We talked about, you know, the Proust guy. Proust is a metascientist or whatever, that guy, Jonah Lehrer. But, you know, without going into too much of my own rant about Malcolm Gladwell, what this person in their rant said, we'll put it in notes, fine, fuck it. We'll amplify the signal. Signal boost.
I'm Meg Haberman.
Oh my God. Did you see me on Slack? Did you see me on Slack?
I did. We'll table it. We'll talk about Margaret later.
She seems like the most unhappy, successful person in America.
That's correct.
She has resting dissatisfaction face title. But anyway, the point of this article, which I think, you know, is, what's the word people use? Jeremiah.
To get clicks is the technical.
It's a Jeremiah is an old timey word. It's a polemic, right? It's a rant. But it's a rant that, you know, I think is not without a basis. And this fella is saying, you know, Malcolm Gladwell goes on. He's talking specifically about this one podcast interview Malcolm Gladwell did, where it sounds like, reading this Jeremiah, that Malcolm Gladwell is now all about, oh, you know, Americans need to get back to the office because this is how we have a sense of belonging and all that kind of stuff. And I don't have a super strong opinion about that with regard to Malcolm Gladwell, but the thing that irks me, I'll just say about a lot of turns out guys, and they're usually guys, is the using, like I said last week, Malcolm Gladwell is a really good writer. He's a really entertaining writer. How can you not love what he writes? He's a very good writer. But, you know, without even getting in the weeds about what his expertise is, well, and again, I'm not here to stipulate what this guy stipulates, which is he's an ad guy. He doesn't even have a degree in psychology or whatever. Like, I'm not sure that disqualifies you. But what I do have, the part I find irksome about turns out people in general, in particular, well, there's the one thing, which is like there's some like a medical school or some organization puts out a press release with incredibly novel results. Have those results been replicated? They have not. Will they be replicated? Never. But then you use that to say, well, it turns out that, you know, people who drink 6 glasses of lemonade every morning are 7% more you know, successful or whatever. But sometimes it's even more intuitively counterintuitive. Where you go, think about nagging, the whole idea of nagging. Like, you know, simple people like me thought I could make girls like me by being nice to them. Well, it turns out that girls like it when you disrespect them and call them a tit bitch or whatever. I don't even know how to do it. But then they'll be like, ooh, look at that guy. Well, see, it turns out that the thing you thought intuitively is wrong. Everything you know about X is wrong. Here's 7 things we learned today about this. And like, the thing is, the one part is like this whole like, okay, fine. Somebody read, there's a kind of piece on NPR, even in the pre-Hidden Brain days, where like, I could tell, you can always tell it's the penultimate paragraph written when seen in writing. It's the penultimate paragraph of the piece where they mention that blah, blah, blah organization announces blah, blah, blah results from blah, blah, blah science with a capital Psi. And therefore, so like, you know what I mean? You get this whole like, you know, hey, it may not be working from home, may not be as good for you as you think. And then they mention this is actually the result of like some coalition of big pharma, cigarettes, and Elon Musk conducted this experiment or whatever. But so the first part is that like, it really is like press release journalism with science spray on it in a lot of the time. Mm-hmm. But then the thing Malcolm Gladwell is so uniquely gifted at doing is to tell you a story, tell you an anecdote. Sometimes it's about some squirrely, like everybody would like their own private Oliver Sacks. Everybody wants to discover some incredibly novel thinker working in obscurity who's figured something out that nobody else has figured out. And Malcolm Gladwell he's wall to wall chock-a-block with these stories of this person he talked to who has this insight into something. So it's an anecdote, it's an example, it's something. And when you read it, you go, oh, well, that really makes a lot of sense. As long as you don't think about it too much.
He was my favorite young adult writer. I enjoyed him a lot in middle school.
I loved rantor on sfgate.com. Please remember to like and subscribe. It really helps other people discover the fish wrapper. I think he's a guy, the things that we remember. What do you remember from Malcolm Gladwell? I want to hear yours and I'll tell you mine. Hush Puppies got popular because of hipsters in Brooklyn. There's a person who can just look at a statue for a second and intuitively know whether it's authentic or not. You know, these are things from...
don't even remember that.
Well, that's the first story in Blink.
Tipping Point? Really?
Yeah, remember the statue? The guy who can like instantly eyeball whether something...
Oh, yes. Okay.
Because in a Blink. And the whole... not the whole thesis. I haven't read it in 15 years, but that was the one. Yeah, Tipping Point was the one that had the Hush Puppies one. What are other ones where you, I know you're not a cocktail party person, at the time you were very young, but when you would hear these stories and relate them to somebody, which you, I'm going to guess, begin by saying, well, you know, it turns out that, are there examples, flashbulb moments from reading his books that stick out to you?
Absolutely not. In fact, I remember thinking, I never want to talk about a Malcolm Gladwell book because
I don't
want to
be called... No, but back when he was the guy. Back when we all loved him.
Right. No, but specifically because I don't want to be a tit bitch. I don't want to, like, rain on someone's parade and then get the, like, side eye. Like, well, actually, that's Savant.
I'm going to start nagging you.
Yeah, like...
Oh, hey, tit bitch.
Yeah, exactly. And nice, like, oh,
nice
yeah,
haircut.
You're smart.
Nice haircut. Is it supposed to look that way? Cool shirt. Do they make them for they?
You read a lot, don't you? It's
you read too
one
much, I
favorite.
Think, is what you think I said
oh,
one time.
God. No, I that was.
I love books. I love books. Me and my kitties get together. We just look at my books. I love books. Unfortunate smelting accident. The thing is, he does those stories. He does those things.
I mean, the 10,000 hours thing
is
always
classic.
My favorite.
That's the one that has made me most long-term angry. The example of the Beatles, right?
Yes. And it's exhausting. I don't know. That was the time.
But like when he says that, don't you go, oh, that explains everything in a way that I didn't. I mean, when you first read it or hear it, and if I remember correctly, this is from memory, but the example is it Tipping Point? No, it was in one of the later ones, right?
It was, I think this was actually, it became big because it was an excerpt.
Like a New Yorker article or something, maybe?
It was like a preview for his book.
But the idea is that, roughly speaking, forgive me, Dr. Gladwell, if I'm saying this wrong, but I think the original idea was that for somebody to get to... like an expert level, to get really good at what they do, they have to spend 10,000 hours at it. Now, I bet if I went back and read the entirety of whatever he said, there's a lot more to it than that. But the basic idea, the sticky, which is part of the problem, the sticky part of the idea was saying that if you look at people who are very successful at what they do, they didn't get great at it until they'd spent 10,000 hours at it. And that the example, if memory serves, is the Beatles didn't just arrive on a plane in the United States in 1964, having been together for a couple of weeks. They'd played in the, you know, in the bars. And it is actually legit crazy what the Beatles did. I mean, the amount of time they would play, sometimes 8 hours a day.
And I can't believe I forgot the name of it. The book was Outliers because...
there you go.
Yeah, which is, you know, because the Beatles are perfect.
Because statistics. Well, okay, I'm sorry, I'm going on a rant here. I had pretty good sleep and I've had two iced teas. But, you know, the like you think about that for a second, you go, oh, so the most interesting part of that in some ways is that there's a semi-quantifiable amount of time that somebody has to do something to get good at it. Now, a version of that same observation that's a little less fancy that I heard in high school and I still think about all the time with regard to guitar, it's not how many years you play, it's how many hours you play. And I think that's really smart. That's true for everything. Like if you've quote unquote done something for 30 years, but haven't done it like numerous times per week, if you haven't had a purposeful sort of mindful practice of getting getting better at it. Okay. When you go like, oh, I see. And then, so then that leads to this idea of like, huh, it seems like there might be some kind of a magic number out there for people, you know, to get good at this, but the implication, and he might've said the opposite of this, but what a lot of people I feel like took away from that was if you do something for 10,000 hours, you will get good at it.
Mm-hmm.
And there are people who have played a musical instrument for many more than 10,000 hours who still suck.
Yep.
And you've never heard of them. The Beatles are probably, on the one hand, they are probably the best example of that that you could find. But on so many levels, it's the most misleading example of that you could find.
That's what made me start to feel gross about Malcolm Gladwell, because we're used to people selling ambition with MLMs and stuff like that. But he was selling ideas with a mix of ambition that were misleading. And that is what made it feel really gross.
Deliberate or not, I mean, I feel like the on-the-label attraction of his stuff is what I will probably unfairly call cocktail banter. It's the kind of thing where you could be in a group of people, you go out and you're having dinner, you're having drinks, and somebody says something and you say, well, I heard a thing recently that blah, blah, blah is blah, blah, blah. The classic turns out story, the thing everybody intuitively believes is incorrect, this counterintuitive explanation, not only is the opposite of what you thought, but on a certain amount of reflection, you go, oh, I get it. You know, and this is a good place to look at what's the word Max used to use? The advantages of having money, for example. Like one reason I got kind of my own problems with that concept of grit is I wonder how much it controls for who your parents are and how much money you have. Because the exception that proves the rule, because then you always highlight, of course, you highlight this incredibly talented, you know, African-American girl whose father's in jail and the mother's a drug addict and she became a doctor at age 7. And you're like, oh, wow, I guess she had grit. And it's like, okay, but, and that applies to everybody mostly how? And I feel like the same thing happens here where it's like, then if you just think about that more, the snarky example I just gave, which is the people who've done something for 9,000 hours and they haven't gotten good, well, they just go do another 1,000 hours. Well, what if they've done it for 40,000 hours and they're still not good and not famous and not whatever? And I guess you could say, well, that's not what he's saying. But that's what people took away from it. And the slightly, not slimy, but cynical take from a Malcolm Gladwell will be, well, you know, that's just an observation about this thing and it doesn't apply to everybody. It's like, well, that's the fucking problem. Is like you if you use canny examples that make an emotional connection with people, our minds, I won't say brains, but I think our minds are uniquely tuned to specific stories about specific people. And because that gets on a level both of the heart and the mind, you make a connection with that. You tend to, you know what I'm saying? Like, it's stuff is easier to remember. I mean, not to make it dark, but that whole thing of like, well, why are we still talking about Anne Frank? Because like talking about 6 million people is difficult, but talking about one person, hearing one story, is understandably like incredibly moving. And in that instance, you know, that's why we try to personalize things like, you know, somebody who was killed in Ukraine while trying to take their kid to find water or whatever. Like, that's not cynical. It's a way of telling a story.
See, you went really dark. I was thinking of, yes, like why we get so angry at a single random person for working at Lockheed Martin, who seemed like a total bitch, but then that person becomes the representation of hypocrisy versus Holocaust. But
there's so many Holocaust hypocrites out there.
Yeah. Oh,
you know what I'm saying?
And Frank had white privilege, so she doesn't matter anymore.
Well, you know, she was Dutch, so we have to overlook that.
Yeah, not everyone's perfect. There's one line in here, though, from Malcolm Gladwell that is, I don't know, like, he seems to circle around this, the rantor, as you said, but Malcolm Gladwell says, "I'm really getting very frustrated with the inability of people in positions of leadership to explain this effectively to their employees."
The idea that work from home is not healthy.
Right. And I haven't listened to this interview, but I saw
2 hours
this
long.
Popping around. Oh, good Lord. And I assume that there's more context to that.
Of course.
But of course you can't.
But he knows what he's doing. That's the thing.
I don't know if he knows what he's doing because if he was so smart, wouldn't he realize that he's kind of making like Blink and Outliers and Tipping Point, all of his turns out have been turns out because at that cocktail banter now, you can be like, wait, that sounds wrong. And you can search for it. And oh, yeah, it is wrong. And that was a weird anecdote. But he's right in that, of course, a boss or a manager can't explain why it's valuable because they don't know.
It doesn't benefit them to figure it out, let alone talk about it.
Right. And they do not have the experience, I assume, or at least I assume that's what he's talking about. These people don't have the experience of what it feels like to be home with kids or in a tiny apartment or any of that stuff. They're like, but we can collaborate on effective ideas and blah, blah, blah.
Right.
Because, the penultimate article of, God, what did they actually call it? The fish wrapper? Did you make that up? Is that what people called newspapers? No.
Yeah, I love the San Francisco Chronicle. I used it to line my birdcage. Fish wrapper. You wrap fish in a paper or a website.
Yeah, that's a... Mm-hmm. you learn a new... See, I don't even believe that's a real phrase. And if I was not recording a podcast, I'd be like, people didn't say that. Anyway, the last Gladwell quote he uses is, if we don't feel like we're part of something important, what's the point?
Which is true in obscurity.
Yes. And the ranter goes, right? Don't you feel pointless at home? Aren't you just a waste of life who lacks the wherewithal to interact with the world via any other avenue outside of paid work? Don't you want to go to an office where the copier is always busted, the food sucks, the boss is gropey, and the company forces you to watch Malcolm Gladwell speak at a company assembly? Isn't that a basic human need you're depriving yourself of? Which, sure, all of that is true, but that is not what Malcolm Gladwell is saying. And this guy, as the internet says, kind of tells on himself by specifically mentioning the company forces you to watch Malcolm Gladwell speak at a company assembly. That is not the majority of American jobs. That's not
why don't you bring me
office
in?
Jobs. Yeah, like I'd be like, okay, I'll get that job. Like,
I don't need that many $100,000 talks this year. If I got five, I'd feel pretty good. But I don't think the message I would like to give in the year of our Lord 2022 would be very attractive to the kind of people who want to hire Malcolm Gladwell.
Yeah, I don't know. This guy seems very almost just as out of touch as Malcolm Gladwell, and the same way that I am out of touch as a human being who doesn't go to work at a place where I've never worked at a... Well, that's not true. In the past 5 years, I've never worked at a place long term that didn't have...
In your professional tit bitch career.
In my professional tit bitch career, typically there's air conditioning. Typically, it's physically safe. A large machine was not going to crush me. That's not true. A projector did crush me and it broke my hand. Anyway,
that's on you.
That was on me. But like, yeah, I struggle with not a lack of purpose, but sometimes you're like, man, I really hate being alone for 12 hours a day. And that sounds so very obvious, but people just don't.
And that's a true fact stated. I feel the same way a lot of the time. Not lonely, but lonesome sometimes. I'm rarely.
Let's kind of circle back to that because I don't know what the distinction is. What other than the adverbiness of it?
In the rules of thumb book, it says that when you're a guy in a bar trying to pick up a girl, you should look lonesome but never lonely.
What's the difference?
a cowboy versus an incel.
All right, help? Proceed. I'll allow it. Okay, proceed.
All right, but I'd allow it, but keep an eye on it, counselor. I got my eye on you.
Mr. Jones, this isn't your show.
I would like to cross-examine Pappy McPoyle. Charlie Day, background bird law. Okay.
I've stolen your world. I apologize. I now give back your space.
No. I was about to snap on this new petard that I could hoist myself on, because there's a piece I have in front of me now. It's in put in show notes. This is a piece from The Atlantic in 2010. And well, first of all, let me do another one first, real quick. One of my favorite things Malcolm Gladwell ever said, and I talked about this on the Folders site. I think this is a New Yorker piece. And it was a very turns out piece, but as it happened, hey, isn't it funny how cognitive biases work? Like, when your confirmation bias tends to really light up when somebody says something you agree with. And he said the smartest fucking thing. I don't know if it was he or, you know, the quote that he chose, but it was about, I think it was essentially, okay, so Malcolm Gladwell, probably New Yorker, something like the myth of the paperless office. And you're probably too young to remember this, but there was a time when it was like, you know, this is the year of Linux on the desktop. It was like, we're always like this close to the dream of the paperless office. But of course, you know, we continued to have things on paper. And the kind of thing that makes me think that he is a little bit cynical is his insights are so good sometimes that I think he does think about this stuff. So he said, he read this really good piece on why it's been so, why it is so challenging, you know, classic, rather than just saying stuff like, why don't you just, well, how about we look at why this problem is difficult rather than whether, you know, why your easy solution you just came up with didn't work. And there's a lot of reasons why paper's still around, but I think it was the last paragraph, and it was something along the lines of blah, blah, blah. It's not that we need to use less paper. It's that we need to save, keep, and file less paper. And I was like, that exactly nailed it. The real problem is like dealing with paper as a thing that is the truth that you have to file and keep in places. And some kinds of things like that you'll always have to deal with. But okay, that actually becomes good advice in some ways. Like to me, he maybe didn't mean it this way, but I think it's good advice to say to somebody, stop worrying about a noun called the paperless office and start thinking more about how much paper you actually need to process and save. See, like stuff like that is like so smart. And anyway, that's why I feel not that bad saying I think he's a little cynical. This is an article, set number two, and then I'll throw it to you. This is from The Atlantic, November 2010. And like I say, I might be petarding myself. Well, I don't think we say that anymore. I might be hoisting myself on this one because this guy is like a low-key hero to me in some ways, but I think, I don't know if he's problematic. I think he was initially he was in the Elizabeth Holmes documentary and seems like he was kind of into Theranos a little bit. There's this guy, okay? I think he's at Stanford. Is that right? Anyway, this guy named, I've talked about him before. His name's John Ioannidis. And have we talked about this before?
I don't think so.
You can find, it's in the doc if you want to click. So there's this piece in The Atlantic about this guy who heads up a group at a school. And the name of this piece is called Lies, Damned Lies, and Medical Science. And so basically this guy, John Ioannidis, I think I'm saying that right. He has this group of people whose sole purpose, at least at this time, was to go through and find all of the, like, I could just read this paper and I can tell there's an error in, like, he can find an error in almost every part of any research project. Like, I haven't read this in a while, but it was like he and his group will go in and all they do is meta studies. They do studies of other studies and they look for problems in methodology in particular. And like, once you read this, talk about the road to Damascus, you're like, oh, I see. Like, there's so many, and I'm not a scientist, so give me a break. But like, it was really illuminating to me. It was around the time I was very interested in you know, contra, turns out, culture. And I was very interested in things like, you've heard the phrase file drawer effect?
Nope.
File drawer effect's a wonderful phrase that describes some gray to black hat
research stuff where every time you get the results you didn't want, you put it in a file drawer. The way I was saying to my wife about
this is
like
confirmation bias, basically, right? But not confirmation bias, the replica crisis.
This is ultimately what this whole group is about, but for example, a really cynical example would be, here's a new paper that just, check this out, Hidden Brain. Turns out that if you use a 1975 nickel and you flip it 100 times, it'll come up heads 72 times. And here's science to show that. Well, if you threw out every result that wasn't the one you wanted and only kept the ones that were the result that you sought, that's called the file drawer effect. And I think it happens in big and little ways, and it can happen at many levels. So what Ian Otteson and his group does is they go in and they do stuff like look at like just the very like the way you framed a given, you know, study. Could be a problem. Look at like where, how did you decide who's going to be in this study? Did you control for this? Did you control for that? How did you come up with that p-value? All of this stuff. And it's just that ever since this idea got in my head, because Alex, I grew up like anybody else saying, if the New York Times or NPR says there's science about something, I go, I guess I should drink more coffee, or I guess I should drink less coffee, or I guess I should put wine on my snack wells or whatever, because it helps my heart. Oh, turns out that put the dip in your snack wells in red wine makes your heart bloat. Oh, thank you, Shankar Vidanyan. Thank you very much. Super interesting, turns out. I don't know. Once that idea got in my head, though, I've gotten skeptical enough to, at least with my meager ability, sometimes at least go read the abstract for something. And, of course, I still rarely understand it. But, you know, in some ways, the bottom-ish line is that if we have a hot take for something and then cherry pick a result and then support it with an anecdote about a lovable old man who lives in a lighthouse, that becomes a very sticky idea.
Mm-hmm. I'm literally picturing just, even this anecdote about an anecdote.
Hello, Malcolm. Welcome back to the lighthouse. Can I make you a tea? Turns out tea makes your heart smaller. And he has a beloved three-legged dog named Gus. Oh, I like that anecdote. I'll tell that anecdote. That's good. Thank you, Malcolm. But it is a good distinction because like in addition to the going back to the beginning, like the whole like leader versus boss or, you know, house, you know, work versus office, those kinds of seemingly meaningless distinctions. It's like just because somebody's a great boss does not make them a good leader. A great boss is.
Oh, yeah.
Well, no, but think about like, well, who's the one who decided that boss is great? The main way that person wants to be a great boss is in a way that makes their boss, manager, or leader happy. Mm-hmm. It's like that day you figure out that HR works for them, not you. HR is basically like junior lawyers. You know, they're basically just there to protect the company, but they do it in a way of making it look like they're there to like make sure your vacation days are used.
That's why I think it's fascinating that a lot of the game scandals are like, this place didn't even have an HR group. And it's like, well, yes, that's just stupid because they're a small, dumb company. But if there was an HR group, that isn't good for the employees. That's not going to like, that's not going to help them.
It's not like getting to choose an intimacy consultant. I mean, there are people who are there to make sure that it's difficult to sue the company and win. That's what HR does.
They're there to cover up the bullshit. Not like
they didn't even have an HR department. Yeah, because you know the culture of HR department, it's a lot like an ombudsman. It's mostly an independent office. They just walk around and they're like, you good?
Yeah, you know what? it's like having your your academic counselor is there to like manage your emotions. No. They want you to get out of the school and get a job so that you can have so the statistics can say, 98% of our class graduated. Yay! Claps for you.
Well, and if you get more people to apply to your college, your acceptance rate will get more selective. And the way you get more people to, I mean, you know, like New College was anomalous in a lot of ways. And one of them was that our
the college I went to, the acceptance rate at New College, I imagine this has gotten even more crazy over the years. Well, yeah, it was a good school for what it was. But, you know, when I went there, there were 520 students, 42 faculty members. So we did have approximately 9-1, you know, 10-1 student faculty ratio. That hits high marks. But here's the thing. Once we were in 1985, probably in U.S. News and World Report, as you know, they do the annual college things. And anyway, there was one year where New College.
Oh, do I?
Well, New College was featured heavily as the best public college in America.
Mm-hmm.
And here's why, blah, blah, blah. And it was all the stuff that makes people love New College, like, you know, or interested at least in New College: academic contracts, no grades, independent study project, write a thesis, baccalaureate committee, all that stuff that attracted, you know, me in part. But like, mm-hmm. you've been in U.S. News and World Report and they say, wow, this school, they have this acceptance, and it's like golf. A lower acceptance rate is considered, it makes you more selective is the term.
Mm-hmm.
And we were on par with Harvard. But, you know, Harvard has thousands and thousands and thousands of those poor son of a bitch undergrads that are funding all the other programs. Well, New College, there's 520 students. And so, like, if you're in U.S. News and World Report, guess what? The next year, your acceptance rate has gotten even more selective because now they've heard about you. You know what I mean? It's like that the denominator changes in some ways. Is that right? Yeah, the numerator is always 520 or whatever. Nice.
Yeah, 520 flavors.
Anyway, enough about that. Malcolm Gladwell, I'm sure he's a nice guy.
Boy, he seems like a...
He's a person of color. You shouldn't make fun of him.
I didn't know that he... I think most people don't know that he's black or
they have,
whatever
they have blacks
he
in Canada
wants to
too.
Call himself. Oh,
Canadian blacks, they call him. They put a U in it. BLAU.
Canadian blacks.
To quote my kid at age 3, that's not funny. That's not even a joke.
Oh, children are... It's upsetting when children are smart. I don't like it. Don't like it. Don't like it when my niece says something profound. Because I know it's, you know, she doesn't mean to be profound. But I'm like, no, don't like that. Don't like that.
I was thinking about that this morning. I was thinking about this morning because I was quote-teeting the tit bitch, Isaac Chotiner, who's writing mm-hmm. I love and whose writing terrifies me. About like how to just get this thing out of me, because he was saying, oh, there's this crazy thing Trump said, and everybody's like so credulous when Trump says something, and I was like, I think about this every day, and I especially think about it every time anybody says, and do you remember during the debate when Mr. Trump said, "Proud Boys, stand by and stand down"? He was addressing them and telling them to stand by and stand down. Okay, well, first of all, stand down means don't do anything.
All right, I'm going to be the well actually person. He did not say stand down. Hold on, what's he saying?
My point is that he did the thing, Alex. He did the thing where he started talking and didn't know what he actually wanted to say.
Yes,
and,
right.
And he was sundowning and he malapropped and he said mm-hmm. this thing that makes no fucking sense. And yet to this day, like Andrea Mitchell will be there very credulously saying, well, you know, there's his history with the Proud Boys. He's telling these, sending them secret hand signals through the debates. And it's like, no, he's not. He's lost his fucking mind. His brain is like tapioca. And so when he barfs out something and then people, and you ever notice, like, especially even on cable news, people would not read his tweets verbatim. They would correct. They couldn't stand to read his tweet as illiterate as it was.
Mm-hmm.
The guy's not hooked up right, and we make him seem like he's better than he is when we glide over what's obviously just him. Oh, you remember the one we used to talk about, the "and" thing he does?
The "and" where he just keeps saying
he reads something. He reads.
Then he adds something to it.
He says the wrong thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sorry, go on.
Like,
yeah.
You know, very, very, very important time. I can't even emulate it. But he'll say something like, have to read something like, tubes, both toilet paper and fellatio and fallopian. Like, he just adds the correct word after the word and keeps talking like he didn't mm-hmm. just fuck up. Like, nobody heard him just say the obviously wrong thing. Ooh, Mr. Trump, he read good.
Most good.
Get a toilet, not even a little fart would fit in it. Come in and they're jumping around saying they're the turbo team. And they say, don't run, walk. You're not on the turbo team. And you go to your room to try and read your art book.
I don't know. That's not funny. That's not even a joke. That's not even a reference. What is happening? No.
What's that a reference to?
I don't know. I have
Jesus
no idea.
Jesus fucking Christ, Alex.
I have no idea.
I've reached the end of my rope with you. The challenge this week is going to be to watch everything John Mulaney has ever done and to watch every episode of I Think You Should Leave, because that's the very first sketch in the very first episode of I Think You Should Leave. Has this ever happened to you? The two guys come over and they take for 2 hours. They go in and out of the bathroom, taking turns, taking mud pies.
Well,
and then you find a receipt from Home Depot and they replaced your toilet with a joke toilet. Not even a fart would fit in. Has this ever happened to you?
I can
call
only
me now,
keep
please.
So many toilets in my mind at once.
The toilets
right now...
of my mind.
Maggie Haberman's toilet is currently
okay.
My...
I love that band.
Wait, so along with your sympathy for Alex Jones.
I was talking about the torn up documents. You wanted to talk about torn up documents. You put
it
in the doc.
I didn't want to talk about the torn up.
You put it in.
Well,
you put it in the
I
doc.
I just wanted to talk about the toilet. It was a funny picture of a toilet.
You wanted to prove to me that you use pinboard. I get it.
Wait, what?
You?
I wanted to prove that her? I used. Oh, probably because I pin.
She's got a mayonnaise egg thing going there. She calls it a man egg. Welcome to Dubai Friday, where Alex points out that I like things. I'm a fan, first and foremost. Her?
I like how Arrested Development is under retro TV's shows on Netflix. That made me feel real good.
Did you ever watch the Mitch Hurwitz version of that bad season where he supposedly redid the episodes? Did you ever watch that?
No, like the when it was the Netflix exclusive and it wasn't very good.
Well, they had their comeback one, which was weird and not good.
Oh yeah, because it was each
it was
character.
Per character, and like it didn't really work. Well, supposedly he went and re-edited that season, not in that style.
I'll find out the linear cut. Okay,
I like that you're using pinboard. I added a challenge this week to rediscover pinboard.
Ooh, you said something that I really, really liked about pinboard to the point that I thought that I had screenshotted it and that, but I didn't. Oh, messages! You are not syncing. I just read this. I have driving focus mode, and so I was driving yesterday.
I like that you've got a robot responding to me.
Yeah, and it sends, hello, Alex here. I'm driving with do not disturb while driving turned on. I'll see your message soon. And they said, hello, Merlin here. I'm reading your message about driving. I support your driving.
I want to be an ally.
I don't like how driving is used twice in this, and I want to be able to edit it, but you can't anyway. File to radar / feedback.
What, mine or yours?
No, my. I hate how it says I'm driving with do not disturb.
Excuse
while driving,
me.
Turn on.
I'm driving. Show some respect for my journey on wheels. My lived experience behind the wheel. I hate that guy. Why does he talk like that?
Oh, you called pinboard pure, which I didn't necessarily read it as angelic because you and Roderick talk about words mean things.
Oh, I could have written more because, I mean, yeah.
But it is. It's so pure because there's just so little to it.
But exactly. But like there's a thing Jeff Veen said a long time ago that struck me as smart. I think this might have been on the interview we did with him and me and Dan, but I don't know. He said something about the way they developed. I don't know if this is a Google or a Chartbeat or where it was, but that they, at least I'll probably explain this wrong, but I remember hearing about a thing in the early 2000s where you write the documentation before you make the app or the, you know, functionality. Mm-hmm. But like, mm-hmm. I don't know if that's true, but what he said that was so smart was what we do is we build the API first and then make the web page.
Yes.
And like today you look at that and mm-hmm. go, why? That makes a lot of sense. But mm-hmm, what mm-hmm. I one thing that's neat about, I don't know, do we want to pin this on or credit this to Web 2.0? But one of the things, you know, we got into where people were doing, you know, in order for Web 2.0 or Ajax, if you like, to do its thing, you had to have a web page that, you know, validated. You need to understand what you're doing with names and IDs and all that kind of stuff. But one of the things I feel like, thank God Ajax and Web 2.0 brought this along, is that URLs are not just meaningful, but they're hackable.
Mm-hmm.
And to this day, like, I mean, you know, have you ever like wanted to go find the, like, say a tweet that somebody had, and so you go twitter.com/ and then start writing in the name, and like, you know, at any point you can change anything in that path to get something different. Like, I love the beauty of an API where it exposes what's happening in the URL. So like if I go, like, what's an example recently? So we've got, I'm not encouraging you people to follow this at all, but Alex and I are trying to use Pinboard for, you know, collecting links. And so we made up as the English say, a nonce tag. But, you know, you get T colon or like U colon. U colon is the username. T colon is the tag name. But you don't need to go and do a search on a web page to change that. If you understand that the way the API works is, well, not works, but the way you interact with the API is not just through a web page, but you can know with confidence if you change this path in the URL, you know you'll get this result. When I say pure, I mean, it really is about doing this one thing, but there's so much smart technology behind what makes that easy and what makes that simple. But it's, you know, it's like the guy, Mache, I guess, is that how you pronounce it? Like, he knew what he was doing here, man. Like it's still up. It still works great. And it's very pure in that way.
I don't know how much. You might be able to hear a Tamagotchi beeping in the background because there's a lost Tamagotchi in my room that hasn't died yet.
Oh no, my Tamagotchi.
I can't find it. So it literally, it's like, I'm sick. Feed me. And I don't.
I'm going through the opposite of right now of that right now where there's an Eve room somewhere in our hallway that I can't find, and there's a Hue sensor somewhere in our lounge that I can't find, and I've done things like, but the Hue still registers like light, like how many lux and stuff, so I've tried turning lights on and off and using a flashlight because there's no Find My for these things. Like, I want it back. It's out there collecting data. And then eventually the battery will die and it'll be like Tears and Rain. I'll never find it again. It's probably organized somewhere.
I have all the serial numbers for all of my home devices.
Me too.
But
me
I don't know where they are.
Me too. I've got it all in Home. Which one?
Home log. It's a purple.
It's purple. Do you ever have trouble? So like I just installed a new smoke detector that has HomeKit integration, and like it was kind of a pain to set up just a little bit, but you know, okay, you get a new device and you do it through HomeKit, and then like you can say, okay, I'm in Home Pass now, and I would like to add that to my corpus. I want to know the, you know, HomeKit number for this and the serial number and all that stuff. So if you say add existing, it usually works. Do you ever have problems scanning the code with your camera and it not working? Is that just me?
Yeah.
Because the other great thing is you can do it. Huh. You can do it. You can start. The thing is, again, APIs. You can go into Home Dash with a new device and it'll say, do you want to add an existing? Is it an existing device or do you want to add a new device? And I've had this work before. So you got a brand new device. You just took an Eve something out of the box. You can scan the code inside Home Dash. It will add it with the serial number and everything to Home Dash. They have reports you can print out. That developer's so cool. And then that will get added to HomeKit. But I don't know why sometimes the camera doesn't go.
Yeah, I can't figure out.
And sometimes you can't even enter it with your fingers. It's weird.
Oh, I've never had that. Huh.
Yeah.
Yeah. I always assume it's my fault. And or at least it is indeed always my problem. And often it is my fault. So I'm just like, all right, we'll just put this in by hand. Kind of like how when the, for years, I know that we always go back to Evernote. And the one time I do truly feel old is when I'm like, remember when Evernote was good? But that's
so good.
I thought for years that it's like, oh, no, I'm just using it wrong. And it's because I've been so spoiled with apps that like Marco makes. I mean, Instapaper, I know he has not had something to or anything to do with for a long mm-hmm. time. But I've always, we should talk to
it
that guy.
It still works. And there's still, as much as I'm loving Matter, which you turned me on to, there's still stuff that works a lot better in Instapaper.
Yeah, yeah. Like Matter is an awesome service. I really like their app. But sometimes it breaks.
I wish it could automatically keep pulling down my Instapaper stuff. It does the initial right. sync eventually. But I kind of wish it would go to both places. And I love that Instapaper, you can send it to Kindle. You can pipe it into Pinboard. So everything I bookmark in Instapaper automatically gets added to Pinboard as private and read later.
Mm-hmm.
Well, just because it's always there if I ever want to search against it. Yeah.
It's so cool. And I wonder, and this is Marco and _ very good at this in Under the Radar, I think.
Great show. It's almost never longer than 30 minutes.
Oh.
But I love that David has to say that every time now.
But the...
Almost never.
Most programmers and developers, I think, don't necessarily describe the brilliance of their work, and not necessarily out of humility. It's just hard to articulate why something is so good, which is what
I can't even imagine being David and having my head in that development stuff on so many different apps and so many things, so many different states. I would find it very difficult to be able to talk intelligently to a consumer about that at all. I think it's amazing that he does it as well as he does.
Yeah, which is why I find Under the Radar so fascinating, because even if I don't know what they're talking about, like they can articulate when it is like a normal, like why something is good for normal needs.
It's a secret. Well, it's also a secret. It's a secret feelings podcast.
Because
I mean, I don't think they intend it to be that way. I imagine for people who are developers, there's all kinds of ways it's useful, but even a whacker like me I'm not a developer. I don't really have any interest in becoming a developer, but I like hearing the stories about how they think about their work. It's still, I mean, I wouldn't want to say, I hate to say that it's useful, but it's useful. It's really fascinating.
It's
like Masterclass. Like, I don't know if you need to subscribe to Masterclass.
My
God. I love that they gave me a free subscription. And what I love is like, what I don't want to say to people in the ad reads or otherwise is that if you watch the David Lynch things, you'll become a filmmaker like David Lynch. What I will say is like, Alex, what they call a stake in the ground. My stake in the ground. I like hearing almost anybody who's good at what they do and is excited about what they do. I love hearing anybody in that position talk about what they do.
Yeah, we are both fans of competence porn. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's fair. Yeah, I think that's true.
But I'm not saying like it's a bad thing. Like porn, I think I said, I don't know where I said this, but like porn has a time and a place.
Well, I also like competence. No, it's okay. Don't dwell on it. I also like competence porn movies. Like I'm not immune to that. I enjoyed The Martian. Like I like that he figures out how to grow potatoes on Mars. Like I love that kind of stuff. And or, you know, again, another space one. Think about something like Apollo 13. But I like competence porn as a genre. I don't know. I feel like we learned so much. There's this website I used to be obsessed with that I think is long gone. I've tried to find it. I don't know where it is, but there's a site in the 43
Does
folders.
Does it have folders?
No, but in those days, that's funny. Mm. That's funny, Bullseye. No, back in the day, there was a site, and I don't know if it was one per day or how it worked, but it was just a website where somebody with a pretty specific, you know, with a job tells you the best trick about their job.
Yes! Holy shit, yes! Oh, God.
And I learned so much from that site.
Hold on. Marker. Hey, Parapals, seriously, if you can find this website, please, please send it. Also, the website that talked about app screens, it was Coxmas before Coxmas. Anyway. Oh, I blacked out there. What was that, Merlin? I want to find the website. Uh-huh. I know exactly what you're talking about. Okay. And it was so
good. How do you want people to contact you?
Who cares? I am now very online. But
shouldn't you provide an avenue for that? You just threw down a marker.
Call to action. Call to Twitter. Talk to me on Twitter.
Okay. And make sure you mention them.
At Alex Cox on Twitter.
It really helps increase engagement.
I got accused of that the other day when I asked, someone DM'd me because I was like, do you know what pushing rope means? And someone's like, I know you're just trying to get your Twitter numbers up by getting more engagement.
What Twitter number does that help? Wait, what Twitter number does that help? Is there a Twitter number I'm not aware of?
Because apparently it's like, oh, this makes the algorithm go show your tweet more, which is probably true. But most of the people who follow me on Twitter, you tweet.
Because the old man at Twitter who sits on a throne goes, it appears that Alexandra is getting more engagement. Let's give them more of whatever we have here.
Yes, give me more of this.
Here's the two I always remember. Customer service person. I know this is at this point kind of old, but when I first heard this, I was like, this is the fucking smartest thing I've ever heard in my life. Customer service person in a, you know, kind of tech adjacent customer service role. You know, the thing where you ask somebody and act like you haven't heard this, play along. So customer service person says, have you tried, you know, we'll start with turning it off for a few seconds and then turning it back on. Well, you know, okay, well, they're going to say they did that. Okay, well, let's try this. Try unplugging it and then plugging it back in after a few seconds. People will say they did that. Okay, here's what the person says. No, here's what you do. You say, I know this is a long shot because you've already restarted, but it never hurts to try. If you ever had a Nintendo, you'll know about this. Could you do me a favor? Could you pull out the plug and could you lightly, just very lightly blow on the prongs of the power pig, the cord, and then just wait a few seconds and plug it back in. It probably won't do anything, but it might help. And miraculously, it fixes the problem. Because why? Because you told them to turn it off and on, and they said, I already did that. You told them to unplug it and plug it back in, but you gave them something extremely specific to do that ensured they unplugged it and plugged it back in. How brilliant is that? And they get to salvage their dignity. They don't have to, you know, because people are, I think, a little bit, I'm defensive sometimes with customer service people. It's like, hey, listen, I'm a seasoned technologist. Don't tell me to do stuff with plugs. I'm smart. That isn't that a good one? Blow the dust out of the prongs.
That genuinely, I think, has helped me with like a nearly a decade of any sort of troubleshooting in my life, whether it be tech support for my parents.
It works for so many different things.
Let's say you have a boss who doesn't like to admit he's wrong, but you know exactly what it is, and it's like, listen, this is, you know what?
Or a family that refuses to look for anything except in the places they claim to have already looked. Well, then I guess we've solved it. To find something, you must look in the places you have not looked yet, which includes under, behind, and near things. Can I tell you my favorite obscure one? There's an obscure one, but I love this one.
Ooh, iced tea.
Sorry. Oh gosh.
Oh,
sorry,
no,
Quinn.
I like it. Makes
Quinn
me.
Does, well, I'm not drinking. Quinn Diet has Coke. Quinn has on the DL mentioned that Quinn can hear me putting down my seltzer can, and it's apparently very loud to Quinn. So.
Oh, yes, it's like, I guess I'm going to be a Marco Cuck this week, like how he can very much, he knows the lines of Casey's air conditioning when he edits ATP. Like,
oh,
there's a little seltzer spike. It's just there. And it's getting,
oh, Jesus, don't, please don't tell me this. Please don't tell me anything about myself. It's so vital for my continued living a life that no one ever mentioned anything about me.
You were the original please don't perceive me. I bet if your tweets weren't deleted,
I would love to not be perceived. I would just, it's whatever the opposite of famous is. Title. That's what I want to be. This is again from before your time, but you know, malls used to be a different thing. Used to be time was you go to the mall, you know, all things, and it wasn't unusual at all for there to be like a store that sells pianos and organs, and like a Yamaha store or something. And people of my age will remember there was a time when, as you walked through the mall, you'd hear organ music, and that's because there was somebody, a salesperson there. In a necktie, like standing there and playing the organ by the entrance to the store. Did you ever experience this at all?
I don't think so. In stores that try to be fancy,
if you want to sell a keyboard.
Oh wait, so you're not talking about how in Macy's and Nordstrom's there's a
I'm not talking about the Nordstrom piano. No. This would be a sales guy, usually with a mustache.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Playing the organ by the entrance. Okay, this is the best trick ever learned by this person who used to have an organ salesman job. if you think you see a mark, you think you see somebody who might be a good lead to like come in and buy your organ, you know what you do? No, hang on. You guesstimate in your brain while you're still playing, you guesstimate how old they are, and then you start playing a song that was popular when they were 18. Now, for me, that would be 14 or 15 or whatever. But like if I'm walking through the mall and somebody starts playing Wave of Mutilation by Pixies on an organ, I'm not made of stone.
Yeah, that's...
I'm going to come in and I'm going to sign on the line that is dotted. Give me that Pixies organ. Hey, you know what? Actually, pause. Can I go refill this? You could hear it. Listen to my ice, how low it is.
I know.
Now, I can do this fast. You know what? Why don't we do that thing where I mute and then you do that really lame thing where you talk to the audience or Quinn or whomever?
All right.
How should I let you know that I'm back or should I just wait till you're finished?
Ooh, jiggle the ice. Jiggle the ice. I love it. Or slam a seltzer.
Okay, well, it'll sound different because it'll be full of. Okay, stand by, go.
Hello, friends, countrymen. Thank you for your ears, I suppose. I'm really wishing now that I had a Diet Coke, because then I could also do the slushy thing with ice. It's just an enjoyable sound. Not as enjoyable when it is a plastic container, but still nice. I think I have some nostalgia around it. Like, when you were... Oh, I know what it is. Like when you're at the movies and you're finishing the last bit of a gigantic ass drink that you have and you really need to pee, but you don't want to pee because you're at like the climax of the movie. I didn't do it. I didn't make a sex joke. You're welcome. Oh, he's back. Anyway,
no,
I like movies.
Ahead.
No, I was just thinking about movies.
You're talking about a drink. Is this the Pam Beasley thing where like, you wait long enough and you get free second drink? Is that what you're talking about? Where it melts? What are you talking about?
No. I was talking about how there, for some reason for me, there's something like a little nostalgic about the noise of ice jiggling. And I realized...
Oh my God. Alex, I'm so glad you said that. I have one of those that is so fucking mental. But it's still...
Go on.
Oh, it's so fucking weird. As previously stipulated, I drink a lot of seltzer water from cans.
Mm-hmm.
And that means that multiple times per day, I open a can of seltzer and I drink it, right?
Mm-hmm. Same.
To this day, every time I hear the sound of an aluminum can opening, it feels like I'm on an airplane flight.
Oh, now is that a good sound to you, or is it just something that's in the back of your head?
Yeah. Well, it means the beverage cart's coming, and I'm going to get a treat in a minute.
Oh.
But isn't it funny that like 99.9% of the time I've ever opened a can was somewhere not on a plane? Like,
yes.
How many cans in my entire life? How many cans have I ever audibly, noticeably heard open on a plane? Let's even say 100. Let's say 200. And yet I drink a lot. I mean, the percentage of times that I've opened a can and it wasn't on a plane is so much greater. And yet I still have that association of the person, the air waiter, walking up and down with that cart and saying, like, yeah, you want a Sprite? You want like a Bloody Mary? Like, what? And especially when I'm making myself a beverage at night, I always think of being on a plane. Isn't that weird?
No, I don't think so.
It's cool. I think it's cool. I don't dislike it.
Yeah. Mine, as I was just thinking about it, it's movie theaters. And when you have finished your gigantic soda that is mostly ice.
Oh, my God. I got a large Mountain Dew at Nope.
Ooh.
And it was insane. I could barely lift it.
It's a good feeling, though, to have, like, the heft in your hand. It's like, I'm like, yeah.
It does, but I also felt kind of bad because that's a lot of sugar.
Yeah, and that's a lot of sugar that's
but they
gonna...
All, God, our movie theater fucking sucks. It's only been open, like, the first... After it had opened, the first movie we went to in the COVID time, my kid and I went to see the very good movie Free Guy. And I was excited because it's a brand new theater opened at our mall. And our mall, which we go to because it's our mall. It's less than a mile away. And it's got an Apple store and it's got a Target and it's got a Trader Joe's. And it's you know, but it's also a pretty gutted mall, like all malls. Anyway, they opened this movie theater. And I was like, okay, great. Let's go on in. And the thing you gotta know about me is I'm a multiple beverage man. I like to have, when I'm having beverages, I'll have 3-4 beverages. So like when I go to a movie, my preference would be a large Coke and a non-Dasani bottled water and a coffee. I usually get a coffee when I go to the movies.
Fucking Dasani hates. Whoa, wait.
Just regular coffee in a cup. I drink that first.
Oh, I mean, that makes sense.
So we go to this place and we get in there and whatever, it's fine.
No, this is a new technology. I'm going to try. I mean, I'm not going to drink coffee. Oh, okay. Go on.
They must have some kind of deal because this also evidences itself in the Maria Menounos part and in the other ads is that everything's Pepsi. All they got is Pepsi.
Oh.
Which means not only no Coke. It means no Dr. Pepper.
No.
None of the things like a Coke and a Dr. Pepper mix is
no
my go-to
Sprite.
Movie drink.
Oh,
no Sprite.
God.
The closest thing they have to something I would ever consider putting near my body is Mountain Dew, which I like, okay. I'll drink it three times a year. But then get this. They also have this little like fakey bar area. It might as well be like a bar run by robots on the Enterprise. It's got those like beep beep dispenser things and like you can get theoretically get a mixed drink there. I'm like, fuck. And I was like, oh, can I also please have a small coffee? And like, you know what they said to me? They said, we don't have coffee. Who doesn't have coffee?
You keep it around.
It's like Mr. Bookman says. You keep it around. It's full of its crystals. You just keep it around. You can have it when people want it. Fucking ridiculous. And there's this man, the man who always scans or takes the ticket, Jim. He's because what we saw Nope there last week. What else have we seen a few movies there now, you know. Jim, I would cast Jim as the guy in Rime of the Ancient Mariner. Jim's fucking amazing. Jim looks like a character actor. He's probably 70 and he's hunched and he's got a really long beard. And he tells you how he's like, oh, is this your first 4DX movie? I'm like, yeah, it's our first 4DX movie. He's like, oh, it's great. It's not great, by the way. It's terrible. I'll never do it again. But I'm glad for the movie I did see. What was the movie we went for? We saw 4DX version of, fuck, not Nope. That would have been funny.
That would have, ooh, I mean, I have yet to see it.
We saw, oh, you know, shit, dog, we saw 4DX of Thor, Love and Thunder, and it was hilarious.
Ooh, that's weird. Oh, man.
I love Jim. Jim almost offsets the lack of coffee. Challenge!
Oh, Jim, this week's challenge was to watch Friday Night Baseball.
Not Friday Night Lights. That's a different program.
No, that's a... That's a show that was really good, except for the season with a serial killer.
It's so weird the way they went from first season to third season. Yes.
Yeah. Wow, where'd that second season go? Friday Night Baseball came on my radar because Apple TV now has an Apple TV Plus now has exclusive rights to MLB games that are on Friday, and I really enjoy them because the UI that they use to project like the scores and the other terms for the UI that I couldn't find. But like where the little box, a digital box that says where the pitch might go or the chances
of somebody getting on base.
Oh, God, that's so funny. Yeah. Well, and it's so different than watching a regular baseball game, whether it be local or something that's on ESPN or whatever. And I've unfortunately had to do many of those because my friend really enjoys baseball. Not unfortunately.
Talking about the founder of Cox's Cox, Kara.
Yes, we're talking about Kara Fagan. And the reason I say unfortunately is because
I didn't want to say. Now I feel bad about saying her last name because I keep thinking about the standby board at
oh,
the
Kara
gate.
Fag.
Hey, we don't say Kara anymore. Okay.
But I say unfortunate because a lot of times I sort of know what is happening with the sport because I know how the sport is played, but there's a lot of numbers and symbols that I'm like, what the fuck does that mean on the screen? And it makes it very confusing and less enjoyable.
You're talking about like outs, balls, strikes, inning, pitcher, up arrow, down arrow, home versus like all the little, you're talking about in that primary box.
Yeah, but it doesn't say that.
Yeah, no, I know. And like, I think Jason Snell has talked and written about this well, is the like, even people who are familiar with baseball, it can be difficult sometimes to quickly grok what means what.
Mm-hmm. I keep calling it UI, but the overlay for...
Keep going. You're doing great.
Oh, the overlay. I've never seen a good overlay on a sports show, except some NFL, like locally broadcast games.
Oh, they give you a running count of who won't be able to cut their food in a couple of years?
Who's gonna? How likely is this?
See my ring?
This is
my Super Bowl
ring? For how likely this man is going to murder his wife.
I keep it near my helmet.
Oh God! But I enjoy now.
You like the geeky aspect of like the
but
stats
it's not.
Stuff?
That, okay. No.
Yes,
no.
It is. It's very geeky.
It is geeky. I like how baseball is very geeky.
Like the pop ups about betting.
Oh, yeah, that I don't
love that. There's a lot I did not like about this, but
yeah,
I want to pursue this, but like, I'm wondering if, you know, like, for example, when I used to go to baseball games, I'd keep score, you know, and it kept me more, it was more fun to watch the game and stay involved in the game if you're keeping score. You know what I mean? Like, have you ever done that at a game?
What? No, like, every game you keep score. Wait, what is happening?
Well, it's... I don't know. There's like
you
okay.
in your head or like, yeah.
No, it's like, it's difficult to describe, but there's a formatted like page in a spiral book usually. And there's slots for the players on each team, and each at bat, you write down what happened. So like if they struck out, you write K. If they grounded out to the second baseman, 1, 2, 3, 4, you would say like, you know, 4-3. So the second baseman through to the first baseman, et cetera. And it's just, you know, it's something that there's always somebody who's keeping score on. And like, that was just a fun thing of, I guess what I'm trying to say is that like, on the one hand first of all, office supplies, love that. Like I get to use a pen and a paper, but also it kept me more engaged in the game. So you don't think it's geeky, or you think I don't mean that as a criticism, but isn't that kind of the appeal of the, what you call erroneously the overlay, all of those things and the pop-ups and all of that? Isn't that part of what keeps you engaged geek wise?
I think if you are a sports geek, absolutely. And you don't care how it is displayed, but
it's giving you insight. Like I still don't really understand the rectangle for the strike zone, Like, I don't totally get that. I understand it's the width of the base, but what I remember barely is that it's from, well, what are these, like the numbers, like from your chest to your knees and the width of the plate. But it doesn't look like it conforms to that. But it's really cool to see that 93 mile per hour cutter or whatever. Like, I don't know what the fucking pitches are. I don't even understand what a curveball is. I guess I never understood how balls curve. Well, you know, you see a doctor about that.
Yeah.
But I like that it'll show you, like, here's the four kinds of pitches this person has and, like, where they tend to land in the strike zone. I find that very engaging. And like we talked about last time, in the same way as knowing where the line of scrimmage and the 10-yard thing is in football, you know, superimposed, I think that's really helpful as somebody who's not a huge baseball enthusiast. Like, that kind of stuff keeps me engaged in, like, what's happening right now. Because not only for that at bat, for like what's happening with that pitcher. Like, this guy's already had 39 pitches. I think he's getting tired. Mm-hmm. You know, he's still throwing heat, but it's outside the strike zone. And like, what does that mean for the game?
Yeah, no, I agree. I just think often it's not done very well. That can add to more confusion if you don't know what is happening.
Like what should I be paying attention to, kind of feeling?
Yeah, it's just, it's one of the things that you need a name for, like the Photoshop problem. Like, all of these things are equally displayed, but you don't know what you should really be use or what should really be in the forefront of your mind.
Well, and as Jason and others have said in that overlay, I mean, it's like, my kid knows enough about baseball to be dangerous, but because I had to do this for the challenge and my kid happened to be sitting there wondering how long it'll be till we get to watch New Girl or Community, I was like, well, you know, like a foul ball is kind of a weird thing to explain, where it's like, well,
yeah,
if your bat touches the ball, but it's not in play and it's not caught by usually the pitcher, that's a strike. Unless there's already two strikes, in which case you can hit foul balls all day. Like, that's the kind of thing that's kind of weird. I don't mean to be all George Carlin about this, but like, baseball is kind of weird in that way. You've seen at-bats where there's somebody who keeps connecting. They've had two legitimate swishes, like totally miss the ball, and then they can somehow stay alive by hitting at something in the strike zone, and even if it isn't in play, it keeps them alive for more pitches to hopefully either get a hit or get a walk. But it's sometimes difficult to look at the dots and know, okay, like, is that strikes? Is that balls? Is that, I mean, inning is usually I think inning is like a number, and then I feel like, I might be wrong, but like an up and down arrow for which, you know, team it is.
Exactly. But, top, bottom, verse, all of the great positions.
But you know, there's a thing. This is kind of like my point about the dark-haired, large-eyed actresses. Where, like, if I show you all the dark-haired, you know, the dark-haired, like, big-eyed actresses, you, the intelligent consumer, can go, well, obviously, that's Una Chaplin. To which I say, yes, obviously, that's Una Chaplin. Unless you see one of these gals in a TV show, like one of those gals showed up on New Girl yesterday. And because we're super familiar, my kid and I were both like, oh my God, that's Lizzie Kaplan.
Oh, look at that gal over there. Oh.
Look at that. Well, you can do that when you've got side by side for comparison. But this is a problem I think a lot of people don't think about, which is like, are you able, like right now, the one thing in the world you will never forget is that you have a screw in your hand and that screw of this size is used for this thing on this device. Well, first of all, in 2 minutes, you're going to be confused if you didn't like keep track of which screw that is, because out of that context, now it's just another screw. Think about a year from now, if you have to find that screw or a replacement for that screw, where do you go? Where do you find it? Because your entire experience of that screw was about it in isolation. But in this instance, can you glanceably look at that overlay and instantly know what each of those things mean? Well, you go, well, no, it's process of elimination. If you see four circles, you go, okay, maybe that's balls. You know what I mean? Like, you know what I'm saying, though? I think it's a UI problem in lots of places in life, is the thinking that you'll be able to figure something out because it's in context. Like, once you take that thing out of context, will you still be able to? Like, if somebody shows me Arial and Helvetica, I can kind of know the difference. But if you just show me a typeface and say,
what is that? I might say Helvetica Neue. I might say Ariel. I might say, I don't know, some humanist font. I can't tell. I can't eyeball. And if it's kerned differently, it's sort of like that where you like test your ears with MP3 encoding and everybody always just picks the louder one. I don't think we're as good at that stuff as we think. And when you're glancing, don't you feel though, you glance at those things and unless you're familiar with the way that they do it, I don't know. Ugh, I'm ranting. Nobody cares.
But you are bringing up the, like, turns out that I realized when I was, I'm not going to put them in show notes because I don't know where to put photos on the internet anymore. But
I know.
God,
Dropbox really ruined everything.
Oh,
it used to be so fucking easy.
Pinboard. Let things be pinboard and Instapaper.
Well, but with Dropbox, I have so many not that it matters on my currently busted site, but like I used to use Dropbox hot linking for everything. And then one day they said, we're not doing this anymore. And it just died. It's like, what am I going to do? Put on Imgur? Like, what am I, seven? I don't even know how to say it. Did I say it wrong?
Imgur.
No, Imgur. How do you say I-M-G-U-R?
Imgur. How do you say
Imgur?
Read receipts or read receipts?
I say, did you say bread receipts?
Read receipts or read receipts?
No. Are you talking about the Reed Robin?
No, oh God. I am very nervous. Think
about lead or lead? Dawn?
Okay, patreon.com/DubaiFriday is where I've decided I'm going to ask you questions about Blot because
no,
I've been using Dropbox. Wait, why not?
Because we'll forget about it. We'll talk about dicks or something.
Blot.
And then you'll have made somebody pay us $5 so they could hear about dicks. You know what? I take it back. Come listen to us talk about dicks.
Yeah, my favorite.
Give us your fucking
money.com. Yes. The RSS thing worked. Sorry. I got.
Oh, did it get fixed? Wait, no.
So.
Are missing images?
What now? Oh, no.
What are you talking about?
No, I'm just. I was.
I thought you were talking about our missing images on Patreon. Sorry about that, everybody.
Oh, no. I'm so mad. I might do the thing that I hate doing.
We didn't do anything. Oh, you're going to do Martha or who's the other one?
No, I might tweet about it. I might.
Oh, yeah, nice.
I know. I hate it, but it always works, though.
Oh,
I hate
it. Let me give you a first draft.
I
have been a fan of Patreon? Patreon for some time, but alas,
no,
I would have to find another website.
No, I do
open
the
letter.
Thing.
Open letter to Patreon.
No. I do the thing where I say, I do the thing that people do where they go.
Anybody know anybody at Patreon?
No, they do. They do instead of just the at, you do, hey, at whoever. And then
so everybody
can
see you doing
you
it.
Please? Exactly. And then people retweet it. And like,
I just took a shit and you can see it.
Yeah. And especially you.
Because you feel like, let's just be clear, you feel like you've exhausted. Don't talk about me.
Yeah, no,
you've
no,
exhausted
no.
The resources at Patreon. You've asked
correct.
Both the people that work there.
Okay. I'm sure there's more. But isn't it
maybe
fun?
You guys should consider charging a usurious amount for a really simple service. Oh, wait.
Be nice. Be nice. This is help. This
we
is
would be charging you by
no,
the 404
no,
era.
Please. Please. But isn't it nice to see the main show and then the after show right next to each other? You're the one who pointed that out
purpose.
To me in Overcast.
Oh, you got to
exactly.
do it. I always
it's
wait.
It's really satisfying. For the yes, same.
Fucking ATP always slips in somehow in the like 2 seconds between.
I makes
fucking
me so
ATP.
Mad.
We talked about John's TV last
show.
Night.
Show. They beat you. You're.
Yeah. But it's additional. It's additional. It'll come out in a few weeks. It'll be fine.
It's additional content.
Baseball.
All I have to say about the baseball thing is, like, what exactly what you said, but what I did not realize until last night. Of sure, this is a really simple overlay, and I know exactly what it's saying, but it doesn't provide enough information. Doesn't get geeky enough, and I was like, holy shit. Is this the Apple problem with baseball? Because it's hard to determine just how much Apple's involved.
And so that's where, for example, you see like this person is, you know, they're 2 for 4 tonight or something like that. Or in home games, this person is XYZ, that kind of fact.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Whereas this, it looks very pretty.
A lot of San Francisco.
Lots of the, yes.
The font, yeah.
I thought it was just me, but the announcers suck. They suck so much.
Oh, yeah, I'm not bad. I'm not going to say hardly anything about this challenge.
Okay,
I'm
going to
find
it.
Only nice things to say about this challenge.
The
before show thing was excruciating.
Oh, God.
I've been sleeping, and so I slept through the beginning of the first game, and then I woke up and I was like, oh, then the second game is going to be the Reds, which was my team as a kid, and that'll be fun. And go ahead, I don't want to say anything. I'm just going to say mean things. So you go ahead.
I love how they tried to shoehorn in the woman announcer, and there's that pause.
Oh, especially those. You like those AirPods Pro?
Oh God, the very first game was.
It looks
amazing.
Like some kind of a medical prosthetic. Yes. When you see it on TV.
So, pretend people don't know what we're talking about. Instead of having the regular headset that sports people wear when they're talking to someone,
there's the giant one for when you're in a roaring crowd, and then there's the one you never see because it's just a simple in-ear piece.
Like a normal newscaster.
But in this case, there's a lot of iPads, a lot of AirPods Max, a lot of Apple going on.
Pink AirPods Max just on a baseball field is funny. And the thing is, baseball, ooh.
That sounds like you're describing somebody's family crest.
But once again, I will assert my thought that baseball is not just the geekiest sport, but it is the sport most like Pokemon. There's literally also a trading card game for both, and they all are basically cosplaying. They don't need their uniforms to look like that. Like, their uniforms are not just designed to make them play baseball better. The old-timey uniforms are modified so that they are better at playing baseball. Like, no.
I still, I have a lot of problems with the pants that look like flares. You should have the socks with the stirrup socks. Like, you should be wearing, if you're not wearing those, you're not playing baseball.
Well, that's, I am 100% in favor of cosplaying while doing sports.
Okay. And what are they cosplaying as, Alex?
As a sports
Pokemon?
As players.
No,
who...
but they're not. That's what they do, Alex. That's their vocation.
No. They are cosplaying as people who play a sport that was played in the early 1900s.
Oh, so they're more of time players than cosplayers.
They're okay.
Like, you come out and you dress like Raleigh Fingers or something, or Catfish Hunter.
Anyway, I like baseball hats, though.
Or another relief pitcher I can remember. Hey, listen, do me a favor. Will you think of something funny to end with? Hey, here's the thing. This is not for me. I did not have fun. I only made it two innings, and I was like, okay, I get the idea. I thought the commentator, and listen, because I've told you in a nice way that this is not for me, you're not allowed to tell me what I got wrong or didn't understand about this. I'm making this about personal preference, and if you like this, I'm not going to yuck on your yum. But yeah, it looked good, like in terms of the quality of the video. But okay, here's my hot take. I did find all of the San Francisco words on screen to eventually be a little bit overwhelming and annoying. And my second point will underscore why I feel this way personally. Talking here about preferences and opinions. I thought it was a bit much to where I finally found myself going, who is this for? I guess it's for Alex.
Yep.
I thought it was, but, and like just to be a real old man for a minute, Vin Scully, the Dodgers, famous, wonderful Dodgers announcer passed away. And like, you know, it's weird how many people have such warm feelings about Vin Scully, not least because that's who Harry Shearer is impersonating on The Simpsons. Oh, doctor, boo-hoo, you're breaking my heart. I actually probably know that better. But no, Vin Scully is an amazing. And like, there's this audio going around that I thought was amazing. And the whole thing is like 10 minutes. But it's him calling the game the last inning, I believe, of when Sandy Koufax had a perfect game. And it's so amazing. He's talking. I mean, he's not talking incessantly, but everything he says is wonderful, first of all. But, and it's just, and like I said in that tweet, like, he's just like woven pure poetry for over 7 minutes. And then when the last strike is thrown, he stops talking. And all you hear is the sound of, I guess, Dodger Stadium or wherever it was, just people cheering. Now, he could have kept talking and could have like kept providing facts, and there could have been a pop-up overlay about, you know, any about Koufax, known Jew, throw strikes, but whatever. But like, and I know this is not a fair example, but the yammering, the to me, useless fucking yammering of these three people. And the one guy who didn't talk at all, but just stared at the screen and smiled. That was weird. But like, there was so much fucking yammering. And then the thing that really drove me nuts, this is just an impression. And I don't know. My gut is that this is about small screens. The shots of everything were so tight. There's like you really, you could see every detail of, I guess what in cinema you might consider a medium shot. But in baseball, I would consider a tight shot, like somebody walking from the batting circle to the plate or whatever. Tight shot, tight shot, tight shot. Yammer, 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 yammer. And it's like, oh, I would like to see personally in a baseball game, I would like to see more long shots. And if you're going to talk, I would like it to be good, but not quite that incessant. You know, another thing, you keep score at a game. The other thing you do, and this was true back in I would do this at the games in Cincinnati. You should bring a transistor radio. And you like, you watch the game, but you listen to like Marty Brenneman or whoever was doing the call, you know, for the game. Because those people are so good. And it's not like they're, I imagine they had producers feeding them facts, but nowhere near it is today.
Where somebody cares? That's still well, an but art like, okay,
yeah, but like when
facts.
some guy who probably can't cut his food at this point goes, well, an interesting fact is that amongst ball players who are 6'1" that were born in Daytona Beach, Florida, he's fifth in, and you're like, yeah, you just knew that, right? But like, I wish there was more air in it. And that's what makes me say that's not for me. I didn't feel there was a lot of air in this. It felt dark. It felt brooding. It felt tight. And it felt yammery in a way that I found a little overwhelming.
The reason that I'm specifically harping on the announcers is because every other game I've seen was in an environment where I was either like with, I was with founder of Cox's Cucks, Kara Fagan,
and Big
she is
fan.
Explaining, yeah, she's explaining what is happening in a way better way. So they're way turned
the
out.
Man with the stick wants to make the spherical thing go over the green area.
Anyway.
Doctor. will you continue watching these, Alex? You enjoy it enough to like check in sometimes? Is it appointment viewing, or is it like if it's on, you'll watch it? What's your feeling now on a go forward basis? As you said,
it has actually been a like when not just care, but if one of my friends or family is like, oh, there are teams that I like, I'll be like, oh, cool, it's gonna be on Apple TV Plus, and then inevitably we hang out because I'm the only person that has Apple TV Plus. And it's not, it's
that's
not just appointment viewing. I know, right? That makes me
feel
worried.
That's good anecdata.
Yeah. Did you know 10,000 hours of Ted
Tell me
Lasso.
More. Ooh, let me put my cocktail down and get my notebook. Uh-huh, uh-huh, uh-huh. What else? Huh?